Hello, everyone. My name is Doug Woodard, executive coach with Advisor Game Plan. Welcome to the Thriving Sports Podcast, our public podcast available to everyone. We do have two podcasts. Number one is a client-only private podcast called Thriving Coaches. And number two is this public podcast available to everyone. In this public podcast, in each episode, we'll be talking to a successful coach or leader about specific ways they enhance their team's culture and player development, as well as many other valuable topics.
And I'm Brian Willett, founder and CEO of Advisor Game Plan. I don't know about you, but I'm excited to sit back and learn from each of these episodes with these amazing coaches. Thank you for joining us as we dive deeper into these areas that can lift a team from average to good to great.
Hello, TCU audience. Very fortunate day to be joined by Dr. Hard to believe saying that, Mark Jones, known for the rest of this or the duration of this discussion as Jonesy, is presently vice president of North Point Recovery here in Omaha. Prior to North Point, spent a lot of years as a director of health and medical services at UP here in town, obviously one of the stalwart employers here in town, Union Pacific. Prior to those 16, 17 years, he was vice president of clinical services at Maplewood Behavioral Health. Jonesy also served as clinical director of behavioral health at Boys Town. He has a bachelor's degree from Creighton. This is kind of a menu of things here. A master's degree from Kansas and a doctorate from UNL, which we've never really discussed how a Creighton grad ended up getting a doctorate from UNL. I'm not sure you want to talk a lot about that.
I don't mention it often.
He served on the faculty of both Creighton and Bellevue, serves as right now as mental health and sports performance consultant at Creighton in men's basketball, and I think some of the other sports Correct. As well. More than all of that, Jonesy's a famed member of the legendary Leffler League, Omaha's version of the Rucker League, slightly more talented version of the Rucker League from New York, basketball-wise. Jonesy, great to see you.
Thank you, Doug. Honor to be here. You may remember all those years I spent at Boys Town. One year I was the varsity basketball coach, and we played you guys. You were coaching at Roncalli. And my claim to fame of that was we were ahead of you at the end of the first quarter, 14-9. You know, you end up winning. But, like, so, you know, I won one out of four quarters against you. And
I do remember that.
Yeah, I think you won state that year, 97. Does that sound right?
Well, 96 we won.
96, okay. So you were coming off a year, yeah.
Coming off a year, yeah.
Nice team.
That's, yeah. And your memory is a lot better than mine.
Some things, you coached a lot more games than I did. So some things you remember and other things, like somebody will remind you something, like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's more what you just said. I had no idea. Jonesy, what first drew you to this whole area of sports performance, mental health and athletics? Obviously, you deal in that just as a genre mm-hmm. for your life's work. But what, I guess, drew you to it?
Yeah, so right after college, I started working at Boys Town and started working with at-risk kids, abandoned, neglected, abused, all those kind of things. And so I was not a psychology major in college. I was actually a history major, but I'd always enjoyed working with kids. So that was the first job I took after completing my undergrad. So, you know, right away you get exposed to a certain amount of things in at Boys Town in terms of the psychology of well-being, if you will, or the psychology of helping kids reinforcing the right behavior and how to correct behavior and those kind of things. And so it got me interested in pursuing a master's degree at Kansas that you mentioned earlier. And so from that, I really started to become very interested in behavior change. And, you know, the whole field of psychology is in many ways centered around behavior change and or supporting others or developing environments right. that are conducive to, you know, well-being and thriving. And so that got me very interested. And then I began to see there were certain concepts that really apply to sports with my background in athletics that, you know, many of the same concepts in terms of redirecting behavior and helping young people work through challenges and problems and problem solve, you know, kind of fit into this sports genre, if you will. But there weren't really many programs out there in terms of sports psychology. And I think the only one at that time in the early 80s, mid-80s was San Diego State. It didn't make a lot of sense to pick up, pack my kids up, pack my wife up, you know, leave a job, that kind of thing, and move to San Diego. So I kind of just left it alone for a while, but continued to do as much reading and studying as I could. And the field began to kind of blossom and grow. And in the early 2000s, Creighton had a sports psychiatrist by the name of Dr. Todd Hendrickson, who unfortunately passed away unexpectedly. And so that left them without a resource, if you will. And so I just, given my contacts there, called down there and said, hey, look, if you need someone to talk to your kids in athletics who may be experiencing a mental health crisis or perhaps a performance crisis, I'd be glad to help. And sure enough, in the early 2000s, I started seeing kids. And Creighton was really wise in that they realized early on that one of the biggest challenges they had was young athletes who were injured and out of their sport, right? Because now you're prone to boredom. You're prone to being loss of relationship with the coaches. The coaches think maybe you're kind of malingering, you know, all the kind of things. The frustration would come from being injured. So they were, you know, kind of ahead of their curve and saying like, hey, why don't you see the kids who were injured and see if you can help them through this? And other times it would be rather serious acute mental health things that, you know, all students and all people walks of life experience at some level. And so began to support them as I could and as needed. And then in the early, mid-2000s, I met Dr. Todd Stahl, who's a psychiatrist, a performance psychiatrist, is head of sports performance at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln for many years, and also is on the U.S. Olympic Committee and supports our athletes, has been to Beijing and in Tokyo and all the places there have been Olympics and the Pan American Games, you name it. So I really consider him a really close mentor. And so from those kind of things, piecing together my own experiences, plus I had three girls like you do and your sons who were athletes, coached a little bit and had really great exposure to a lot of great concepts and a lot of good mentors. And then what's happened is really every college and university now and every pro team has, if not one, multiple mental health sports performance and mental health consultants. So that's how it all kind of came together. And it's very gratifying, a lot of fun to continue to work with young people. And I also work with some high school kids from time to time and some professional athletes from time to time as well. Yeah.
Great. Now, yeah. Jonesy, so you mentioned something, a side of it, I think, and it, correct me if I'm understanding this right, that there's both I guess you'd call it an acute level of this where you're dealing, maybe you called it a mental health breakdown or or something, and then just a performance side of developing confidence, resilience, dealing with adversity.
Yep.
So is there kind of two sides to the thing?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and it's a little bit of all of the above in terms of the chicken or the egg kind of thing, right? And so there are situations in which an athlete is just clearly experiencing a mental health crisis. It may not be related to sports. It could be a family issue, could be something trauma they've been dealing with or a situation, and it just comes up. Maybe everything in their sport is just fine. And then there are other situations in which all the social systems are in place. The parents are supportive. The coach is supportive. The team relationship supportive. So there's no mental health. The young person's adjusting to college or high school, whatever it is, just fine. But they might have is what we know as the yips, right? Or they might not be performing to what they think is their expectations.
Right.
And so that is, kind of a box. But most of the time, there's a blend of both. And as a clinician, one of your jobs is to kind of untangle that a little bit and figure out, okay, where are your stressors? What are they coming from? You know, what's the current challenge? You know, how can we help you on that? What have you tried? What works for you? What doesn't work for you? I mean, so I think a little bit there's no exact formula on that. And it's a little bit of a clinician. There's not a formula, but there's a kind of a playbook and a diagnostic path that you follow, to use a kind of a big word to kind of figure out, okay, you know, what's going on in that person? What's the current situation and how can we help kind of redirect that situation? So it's a great question, and it's one probably that's never really going to be answered fully. Most of the time, it's a blend of a little bit of both.
Okay. So what would you say, if there is anything, obviously most coaches, especially a lot of the coaches listening to this, might coach at the club level.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's third grade, it might be sixth grade, or it might be high school. And they might do it in the summer, or they might do it during the regular season, obviously for those middle school years and stuff as well. What can they do, or what are some simple strategies that they could do to help kids develop resilience, develop a confident approach to athletics, and balance, confident and balanced approach, I guess? Are there any simple things you could say to people that obviously are not experts in this field?
Yeah, what I will say too, another great question and highly relevant, really no matter what level you're coaching at, whether it's a bunch of third or fourth graders or the NBA, most individuals who go into coaching go in for the right reasons, and they're actually pretty good psychologists themselves. Right. I mean, they tend to understand human nature pretty darn well.
Right.
And so one of the first things when I talk with coaches and work with groups, and I've worked with some of the different organizations around town, is you got this, right? You have your approach is really the most important thing. And I think that, so the theme to focus on really is the relationship aspect of that. And it can get difficult in sports because sports is a very outcome driven, right? Even in third or fourth grade, it's outcome driven, right? And there's also a sense of urgency, right? In terms of like, we got to get this done right now. And so you're trying to balance that with a sense of, the sense of urgency and outcome driven with maintaining the relationship. But the key of it is that approach has to make the young person, even the professional, feel safe at some level that the message you're giving them is going to be helpful to them and helpful to the team. Because what you're trying to avoid, when I consult coaches, is this situation where you overwhelm them so much that you flood them with emotions so much, now they can't comprehend the message.
Sure.
Another fancy term is we call it working memory, which is working memory is compromised when you have so much stress going on that you can't hold multiple things in your head. And from coaching, we ask athletes to hold multiple concepts in their head at one time, right? Yeah. Multiple things in their head at one time. But if you are just focused on the outcome and just focused on, the urgency of it, it's easy for a young person to get overwhelmed and start to react emotionally rather because they have so much to hold in their head. I got to bend my knees. I got to jump to the ball. I got to do all those things, right? And so if you put too much pressure on them, they lose the ability to comprehend. It's the way the human brain works. They lose the ability to comprehend all those messages you need them to hear.
Yeah.
So I'm not advocating for just, total softness. There is a sense of urgency, right? There you have to be demanding. Having high expectations is not bad. But to your original question, to kind of build them that resiliency, the message that you want to help them build in that resiliency is, mistakes are okay, and these are old coaching adages. Mistakes are okay, and what did you learn from that situation?
Right.
So as long as you take a bad practice or a bad game or a bad performance overall, and you can say to that young person or say to your team, okay, what have we learned? And I'm a big believer in trying to solicit feedback from the kids in terms of like, okay, you're going to give your four or five points, whatever that is. Maybe it's a timeout. Maybe it's a practice. Maybe it's stopping. But to stop and ask them, what are you taking away from this? And see how they're processing the information, what they can repeat back to you, what they can say on demand back to you. Because now you have an idea of what they're learning and their perspective on something, right? And so I'm a big believer in kind of saying, like, how would you see this problem, Doug? We didn't finish this out. Because in coaching, it's really easy to get into telling.
Right.
Just telling. And there is an aspect of coaching that's just telling. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. We've all been there. But now you're talking with someone versus at them. And I think that in itself, when you can pull that out, what their perspective is, and that's going to look different than a third grader than a sophomore in college.
Sure.
Right? Or it's going to look different for a fourth grader than it is with, a professional athlete. But pulling out their perspective on things only adds to their learning. And it also gives them now they can kind of begin to see the process in their mind's eye.
Along with that, it's very important that we somehow divorce the feeling or the self-worth of the individual from their performance.
Right.
In other words, you're not worth what your performance is as a person.
Absolutely. And that becomes hard in athletics because what are we, you know, back to your resiliency point, Doug, is, you know, what do we teach in athletics, right? Where we, that it's never, was never appropriate to be vulnerable, right? And to not show that you're tough. And so now you're balancing this thing of like, okay, well, if I'm weak and if I, you know, raise my hand and say I can't do this, I'm not tough.
Right.
And so you're trying to get through that and that, you know, also with that kind of the worth of the individual. And that goes back to the relationship side and making sure that everybody has a, you know, everybody has a bit of an investment in that team. And, you know, one way I approach that is when a young person, male or female, is not performing to how they like to perform, they tend to start judging and interpreting things. Like, for example, like, my teammates don't trust me. Coach is going to take me out. You know, what are the fans thinking? What are my parents thinking? What are the recruiters thinking? So they begin to interpret and judge things, which is natural. We all do that. You know, we're all social beings, and they judge and they interpret things. So it's not the thought that they have. It's the meaning they add to the thought.
Sure.
And so now they make up a story that I'm not good enough, or nobody likes my game, or whatever that is. And now they've created a story that's actually limiting them, and that limits their resiliency, right? Because we all live out of our own stories of our mind. And so, you know, one of the little strategies I use is, if you strike out, what's that mean? And kids will look at me and they'll say, well, I went for the curveball and I didn't do this, or I got scared because the guy was throwing 95 miles an hour. And I said, no, if you strike out, what do you mean? What's that mean? And they're like, okay. They usually pause and I have to say, you struck out, which means you struck out, which means you struck out. You added all in the meaning. The coach is mad at me. I let the team down, all those kind of things. Striking out is just a physics problem, just like missing a shot in basketball or, you know, misthrowing the shot put, right? It's a physics issue. We add in all those problems that we make up in our head. So the key in my practice for sports performance is helping kids kind of de-link all those, and even athletes at the professional level, de-link all these stories that we make up when things aren't going well. So that's the approach.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Jonesy, just talk for a minute about, so obviously when we grew up a few years ago, I think the ethos was probably what you mentioned, toughen up, fight through it. And that was the answer pretty much to everything.
Right.
And if you weren't doing well, get tougher.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some value in
yep.
time that needs to be heard, but you're dealing with folks in the sports industry. Have you seen a reluctance to embrace this as a valuable dimension in the athlete, or a willingness, I guess, to embrace it?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question, and what I have noticed over the years, and I'm spoiled. Most of my work was with Creighton, although I've worked with some other organizations. And you know, Creighton's a very special place. That in their major sports, they've had the same coaches for, you know, one sport 35 years now, and the other 22, and another one 20, you know, kind of thing, and baseball. You know, so, but overall, I've seen a shift in that, you know, the old Bear Bryant kind of way of looking at things, that
right.
we were going to go out in the desert and nobody could drink water for 4 days. I think coaches today understand the value of relationships, and they understand the value of how the message is delivered, right?
Sure.
So it's not necessarily what, but it's how the message is delivered. And the other thing I caution them on is that doesn't mean you can't give bad news. And as coaches, I think we all can kind of struggle on that with, like, I got to give bad news. I'm not real comfortable in giving bad news in terms of you're going to be the 11th man.
Right.
And so, you know, kind of like, look, just because you're going to deliver the message that respects the individual, helps them keep learning, building their resilience, doesn't mean you can't have high expectations.
Sure.
And so you can still have really high expectations for being in the process, being in the moment, doing everything right, but not put that kid where they feel like they're being threatened and ultimately where they don't have a good experience. Because at the end of the day, if we're talking, you know, AAU ball or travel baseball or whatever it is, you want the young person to have great experience. And here's why you want them to have a great experience, because I'll get a little bit philosophical here, but a sense of play, right? What makes people happy and healthy in their later lives when they finish athletics is if they maintain that sense of play, you know, whatever that is, a bowling league, a golf league, you know, a church kind of thing. And so if you create a bad experience, my impression is you can turn people away from having that sense of play, social interactions, all those kind of things. So that's why it's so important that coaches who have a lot of influence on young people really try and make that a positive experience to extend their sense of play. Because look, we want our childhood to last forever, right? In many ways, right? And that's kind of the key. I mean, we wish we were all 7 or 8 years old running around again, having fun where nothing really, you know, where we were just in the moment. And so, you know, that's why I think sports is so important, because it reinforces that sense of play and that sense of joy. And if it's all about just, you know, do this now, we lose some of that. And then plus, the other thing is for the coaches, the child's not going to perform as well because they feel like they're under threat.
And you're a walking, you know, caricature of what you were just talking about. If you hadn't had several body parts have to be replaced, you'd still be playing basketball.
I'd still be playing.
Today.
I'm up to seven surgeries.
but you went through, yeah. And I can attest, through several of those, you still were playing. But I think it's just what you talked about, yeah. That sense of joy, yeah. You get just being out on the court,
right.
For us. And for us, it's basketball.
Right.
For other people, it, like you said, it might be bowling.
Yeah.
It might be volleyball. It might be softball. Whatever it is, it might not even be something in athletics, yeah. But something that, yeah. Gives you that childlike,
yeah.
Joy of just going out and playing.
Right. Well, and the thing that the word I didn't mention is that play gives young people that sense of social connection. And we know down the road what makes people healthy is social connection. And that's what I think sports can kind of offer. I mean, I just think of all the levels of friends I have in walks of life, and I'm sure there are tons of other people. I've just been really fortunate. And so those sense of connections is what makes me kind of thrive and builds up my resiliency, because, you know, I have all sorts of social support networks around me. So that's kind of the key in my worldview.
Well, Jonesy, I was tasked to deliver a message from several members of the Leffler League that several have expressed noticing their shot numbers increase as you have not been there. They don't know what the connection is, but they just wanted me to deliver that message for whatever it's worth.
Hey, Jay Billis the other day saying, like, you should never turn down an open three. So I've just followed his advice for 45 years. That's all I can say, right? Like,
you know. You have, well, and also done it well. So, but hey, appreciate you coming in, and this has been fun, and hopefully there'll be some value gained by the folks, coaches and leaders listening. Because it's surely an important area.
Yeah, and so if there are individuals out there who, you know, want to connect with me, feel free to do that through Doug. And if I can be of help in some way, I'd love to be able to do that.
And yeah. if you want to give something, they could do a contact with you directly.
Yep.
Go ahead and let them know how they could do that.
Yeah, so it's, you know, jonesmr_2000@yahoo.com. So
awesome.
If there's a way to make a connection, and because sports is so much a part of health, and we've all benefited from that, and people who are involved with young people make such a difference in their health every day. And so, you know, really grateful for those who are jumping in and doing that. So thank you for having me. I know I called you up and asked you for a favor, but this has been a lot of fun.
Been a lot of fun. Awesome stuff, Jones. We really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Yep, bye.
We have free resources available on advisorgameplan.com. If you would like to gain access to our full version of client resources, please contact us today on advisorgameplan.com to explore becoming a client. Also, subscribe today to Thriving Sports and stay up to date with future episodes and more interviews with more coaches. Together, let's be thriving coaches that put the player first in all situations. See ya.